This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt on the AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
And I'm your co-host. I am the sous chef of the garden, Franklin Proctor. And I'm in a wacky mood this morning. I don't know what
you
it
are.
Is. Yeah.
I want whatever you're drinking.
Well,
like some
no,
of
I
that
checked
coffee.
My coffee, yeah. And I didn't add anything special in there. Maybe I should have.
Sounds to me, well, I think people will get the gist of why I'm saying that as we continue with the show.
See,
because you
alrighty.
Are in a wacky mood.
Yeah, well, it's just some days, you know, you just be off the rails a little bit.
That's
but,
right. Well, you know,
that's
the
cool.
Weather's changing, you know.
I'm practicing up for Halloween.
Oh,
that's what it is.
Are you dressing up? Oh, I guess you don't need to.
Oh, I'll get back at you. Okay, Andre is behind the board today, and he'll be manning the phone lines for us.
Right.
And doing all the producing stuff. What I have to do, though, is to give the phone numbers and the mantra right off the bat, Charlie Dobbin.
That's your job.
Mm-hmm. Charlie Dobbin.
Yes,
Charlie Dobbin. I just want to make sure that I get her name in there. She gets so PO'd at me because I push myself too much, she says. Okay, phone numbers for Toronto, 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, it's toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Well, Mistress of the Garden,
yes,
what's
sure.
on your mind there? As far as your little sheets of ad-libbing you have.
Oh, how smooth are you?
Yeah, I know.
I have a couple of announcements I would love to share with you and all our keen listeners. Mm. Things that are going on.
Yeah.
All right. Number one, the Toronto Botanical Garden and the Ontario Urban Forest Council have partnered to offer a special conference called Spreading Roots. It's all about growing trees in an urban environment. So this particular sort of convention is open to all those who care about our urban forests. Professionals, passionate community advocates, everybody wants to come. It's a conference not to be missed. You will hear from researchers, community leaders, designers, and experts from Europe, Cornell, and across the province. For more information and to register, go to www.spreadingroots.ca.
And when is that again?
Oh, did I need to give you that information?
Well, I thought
I know
maybe
it's in
it might
early
be helpful.
November. I didn't actually put the date down. Good point. It's in early November.
Okay.
All right. I'll tell you the dates next week. How's that? All right. This week, you were wondering what I did this week. Well, one of the things I did
obviously,
I
wasn't prepared for the show.
Thanks for that, Frank. Well, speaking of which, I tried to prepare for the show, but I couldn't get onto the server last night, onto the AM 740.
Couldn't access your email.
That's correct. So if anybody sent me messages this past week, I'm really sorry. I didn't get any messages, but I will. I'll be able to get in eventually. I just couldn't get in yesterday. And as you point out, I went to do my preparation just yesterday. Thanks for that. This past week, Landscape Ontario held one of their trade shows. So this is open to the trade, obviously, called Landscape Expo. It's a two-day event where different product suppliers of products, obviously, but also services, you know, farms, you know, growers of things, vegetables, trees, shrubs, all these people come together. And we were in the brand new Congress Center is a very old venue up near the airport, sort of Dixie Road, Highway 27.
Right.
But they've built a brand new building to the north. It's called the North Congress Center. Very swank. And it was beautifully set up, too. It was all done in black and low lighting. Everything was really pretty, really nicely set up. And it was just, it's a neat, very interesting venue. Bottom line is I was there all day Thursday. And on Thursday, Communities in Bloom held their big banquet gave out the final marks for the communities. And as you may recall, I was a judge for Communities in Bloom.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And There was special mention awards were given out to all the communities who participated in the Fully Judged program. My communities, the City of Cornwall and the Town of Mississippi Mills, both received 4 Bloom ratings and were given special mention for restored historical sites. In the case of Cornwall, it was the Boys and Girls Club, which is a 125-year-old Church of the Good Shepherd that has been renovated into this very funky space for boys and girls, of, you know, little ones all the way up to teenagers, to hang out after school, before school, programs in the summer, and weekends and stuff. Really nice. It's a beautiful space. And in Mississippi Mills, the Mill of Kintail was highlighted. This is a very old, you know, originally a mill.
Yeah. Where is that located?
Mississippi Mills is one of those amalgamated townships. So it's a bunch of little towns.
Okay.
Almont being the biggest town in the Mississippi Mills conglomerate. It is about an hour west of Ottawa.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so up that way. And near, not like sort of south of Perth. Very pretty, though. It's on these rivers, right? Indian River, and obviously the Mississippi River runs all through.
I didn't know there was a Mississippi River in Ontario.
There is, neither did I.
Well,
the
there you go.
Things I learned, too. I mean, I had never been to this area. It's so pretty. Mississippi Mills is really...
And it must be gorgeous right now.
Well, rolling hills and rivers. And it was all mills because of all the rivers.
Sure.
It was all about mills and linen, actually, and cotton and wool mills. Wool, I guess, mostly. And of all that's gone by the wayside because everything's offshore now.
Yeah,
but all these little towns, of course, they've maintained these old stone structures.
Beautiful.
They're all being converted into condos and artists' colonies. And it's really, it's so neat. It's really a lot of energy and very, very artistic, very creative groups, many of whom are retired or approaching retirement, also obviously young families.
Yep.
But that's where the industry is now, is sort of with the retirement and the arts in these areas. So the Mill of Kintail is one of these renovated old mills, and it's a gallery, it's a museum, it's got beautiful gardens all around it. Does the name James Naismith mean anything to you?
Yeah, why is that?
The inventor of basketball.
Okay, yeah, sure.
That's where he was born.
Canadian, yes.
Yep, he was born in that town.
Oh, there you
go.
In
the town, just outside the town of Almont. They're very proud of that. And they've got, in the museum there in the Mill of Kintail, they've got all neat old historical stuff of his, obviously, and photos of the old basketball baskets, the peach baskets, right?
Well, in your initial little diatribe here, you've already offended all the folks in the States who believe that basketball was invented there, you
That's
know.
Okay. I like reminding them that it wasn't.
It is a Canadian game, yes.
Well, it was invented in the States by a Canadian, I think, is the bottom line. He was actually working for the YMCA in Cleveland, I think, when he invented it or tried it out with a group of kids, boys.
With baskets.
Yeah, peach baskets, yeah, with the bottom cut out.
Oh, it's the pits, isn't it, sometimes? Well, hey, it's 9:11, and we better scoot along here because we have folks waiting on the line already to talk to us. And just a quick reminder, those of you calling in, call early, call often, one question per call, and Patrolman Proctor, I will enforce and summon tickets, you know, issue tickets.
Summons.
Or a summons to appear here in the studio.
Summary convictions.
Okay. Charlie Dobbin shall return, and me too, in just a moment.
You supply the what and where, and she'll come through with the how. You're listening to the AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
And Frank Proctor, the sous chef of the garden, and Charlie has done her homework.
Well, you're so funny. You were laughing at me, reminding me that I was so inept in my particular announcements there, talking about this wonderful spreading roots symposium at the Toronto Botanical Gardens, because I didn't know when it was happening. I went to the website spreadingroots.ca and have discovered the actual symposium is November 3rd, 4th, and 5th.
So there you go, Mr. Proctor. Don't make fun anymore.
That's right. And thank you for asking me a question for which I didn't have an answer, but I'm always happy to oblige.
But I guarantee you she's got an answer for Andy, who's calling in from Ballantrae. And welcome to the line, Andy. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Charlie and Frank.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I need to know, I guess almost everything there is that one needs to know about planting peonies. My wife would like me to put some peonies in, and she wants to go along the north side of our house, which is the front side of our house, and I don't know whether they will fare well on a northern exposure.
Not so much.
And what the timing of the planting would be, and what sort of soil composition. We're up at the top of the Oak Ridge Moraine.
Yes, so I know exactly where you are. Okay, here's my suggestion. Number one, if it's a case of going out to buy some peonies to then plant them in the garden, you because you don't own the peonies at this point, right?
That's right.
Right. Typically, actually right now, and sometimes in the spring, you can find peonies that are dormant. It's just a tuber. You can plant now or in the spring, or you can buy a growing plant in the spring. They do grow from a big tuber that looks a bit like a potato. So peonies go, number one, into full sun, which the north side of your house is unlikely to provide.
Not full until about 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah, that won't be enough sun to get flowers.
So it will?
It will not.
No?
No, you need at least 6 hours of sunshine daily on peonies to maximize flower formation.
Oh.
Okay? So you would be better on the south side of your house, or right, at least away from the north side, so that there's more sun than just that late afternoon.
Right.
Any reasonably good quality, well-drained soil. We never, ever plant bulbs or tubers or any, you know, tuberous type plant into a soggy, low-lying area in the garden because they will rot. It'll just be too soggy, too much.
Okay.
So it's got to be a well-drained spot. Not to say it's got to be gravel or sand, but just that it's a place that water doesn't collect.
Is there another type of flower that would resemble or be in the same family, say, as a peony that would work on that north side?
Well, I'm wondering, what is your wife loving about peonies? Is it the fragrance or the color? Or?
I think it's the color as well as the fragrance and even memories from flowers that her mother used to plant, things like that. Just the simple beauty of them.
Yeah.
We have hydrangeas in that location right now.
Mm-hmm.
Huge, big hydrangeas, and we want to reduce that that amount of planting of those and switch over. Petunias or peonies was certainly
came up as a choice
in her
thought. Well, and I'm not surprised, except the couple of things that come to mind is keep in mind that peonies only bloom in the spring.
Yes.
After that, of course, it's just a little green plant that then gives you a little bit of fall color. The leaves often turn a bit of a purple color, and then they disappear all winter.
Mm-hmm.
So when we use peonies in quantity along a foundation planting, so along a home, the base of a home, remember that in the winter, there will be nothing there. It will just be a windswept prairie because there will be no structure at all because the perennial root will be alive, but there will be nothing above ground.
Oh, you cut right back to the ground surface.
That's right. We cut them right down in the fall, and they emerge from the root in the spring, like right from below ground.
Yeah.
So they aren't usually considered it's nice to have one or two perhaps mixed in with some other plants, but to have a big mass of peonies along a foundation wouldn't be the best way to sort of design it for a good look year-round.
No.
But not a problem. The main thing is just look for a sunny spot, well-drained soil, put in as many peonies as you want into that kind of a situation. And if you need some advice from somebody like me or a landscape designer to come and help you get rid of those hydrangeas and change up the look of the garden, contact me through our website and I'm happy to come. I do residential consulting if that's something that you'd be interested in having me come. You know, I know exactly where you are. You're not that far from where I am. I'm in northern Toronto. That would be my suggestion.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, I appreciate all that information.
No problem. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
Have a great day, Andy. And actually, that call takes us to our first break here. And I know we have a couple of other folks waiting on the line and we will be to you very, very shortly. But I'm stretching here somewhat because
I'm stretching here somewhat.
Well,
segue time.
Yes, I see my friends stretching.
First, give my email address, which
of course.
Important if somebody does want to get a hold of me and I can get on the server. It's cdobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at am740.ca.
You are now free to stretch.
Which then now leads us into Sierra Sil, which is something that both Frank and I take as a supplement. It's a mineral, it's like a little capsule with gray dust in it. And that gray dust is from the Sierra Mountains, and that keeps us limber, keeps us pain-free, and it keeps us active, which is very important. Well, I got lots to do in my garden still, and I know Frank's got his kickboxing he does
every week.
So, you know, staying active and staying pain-free is important to us. For more information about Sierra Sil, you can call them at 1-877-JOINT-14.
There are hundreds of sources for tips on gardening, but you need only one. The AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin continues.
9:24 here at AM 740, the Charlie Dobbin Garden Show on the air, and we go to Evelyn on the line from Toronto. Hi, Evelyn.
Good morning. Hey,
hello, Evelyn. Here you go.
Hello, I'm here.
Okay.
Turn my radio down.
Okay. No problem.
Okay. My neighbor had. We're wondering if you know what a monkey plant is. Have you ever heard of a monkey plant?
Well, I've heard of a monkey puzzle, like the tree.
Yeah, me too. But no, is called a. She calls it a monkey plant. I can't find it in any books. Anyway, I'll tell you about it. It's a very small little, sort of a bushy flowery plant, and mine has pink flowers like. An Easter lily, only way, way smaller, like about an inch long. And the leaves are oval-shaped, really, really small, about a quarter of an inch. They have light green in the middle and dark green around the edges. And actually the problem, maybe you could know of a similar plant, she gave me a cutting of her plant, which mine is doing fine, but hers decided not to bloom anymore. So she thinks it's sick, and she was wondering, you know, what she could do to help it. She's had hers is quite an old plant.
So, I'm just trying to think what it is you're describing. So, fragrant flowers or no?
No.
But hers has stopped blooming, but it's still alive.
The last report it was. She's doctoring it. I mean, she may have killed it. That was her other question. If she kills it or if it dies, where could she get another one? Because she said she's asked at a couple of nurseries, and one of them knew what she was talking about, but they didn't have it. So,
well, there is a plant that's referred to as monkey plant. Its proper name is Ruellia, R-U-E.
Let me write that down in just a second here. That would help if we had a proper name. R-U-E,
L-L-I-A.
L-L-I-A, okay.
Commonly grown as an indoor plant, because it would die in the frost, does flower given the right conditions, and has a variegated leaf, though the leaf sounds a little bit bigger than what you're talking about. And yours is doing reasonably well. Hers has been declining.
Well, what happened with mine, stopped blooming too, and I have a feeling it was the pot was too crowded. So I took it out of the pot, and I took a bit off it, but that didn't help it. And then I think it takes a lot of water. It takes a really lot of water. And I think I didn't water it maybe in the summer too much. So the stems got gray, and then little flowers at the end of this long gray stem. So I gave it a haircut.
Okay, good, yep.
And now it's very happy.
Right.
So I told her to do that, but unfortunately I think it was a bit late. So she separated hers.
Okay.
And that might help it, I don't know.
Well, it is a plant that's very closely related to petunias. Like we grow outside. So that idea of giving it a haircut is a good one.
Yeah, because, it worked for me.
Yeah, just like the old petunias we used to grow 20 years ago in the hanging baskets, we used to have to cut those back in order to cause them to get bushy and to be a good-looking plant with flowers. Otherwise, they get really long and thin and scraggly. Little flowers on the ends. Now, of course, petunias have been improved dramatically with all the wave petunias and all the super petunias out there are very different from the old ones we used to grow.
That's true.
But bottom line is lots of sun, water as necessary, fertilize during the growing season, and do as you've done, recognize that when it gets scraggly, cut it all back, preferably when it's actively growing.
Yeah. It was nice and green. Mine looked, healthy enough, but it just wasn't produced. And she wanted, because it seems to produce flowers almost all year. It's amazing.
Yeah. If it gets enough sun, it should. Right, if it's happy and healthy, gets enough sun and adequate fertilizer, obviously.
Well, I think the haircut was the best. I could have put it in a bigger pot, but it's in a quite large pot now. I just didn't want to make it any bigger.
No, good idea, because the bigger the pot, the more roots you're going to have, the flowers and leaves. So, haircuts, I'm glad, it's a good thing to think of, definitely. Yes. Never hesitate with plants like that.
Listen to your program.
Cleans them up. Oh, good. Well, there you go.
I get these ideas from your program.
Excellent. Good to hear.
You tell somebody else to do that on something. Anyway, I love your show,
and I don't know
what we'd do without you, because you're the only plant show around.
Oh, I know.
And Frank is funny, too.
Yeah, we do love Frank.
I'm not so knowledgeable, though. No.
We love Frank when he's not driving me crazy.
Exactly. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thanks, Evelyn.
I'll give her your advice.
All right.
Thanks for the name
okay.
of the plant.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Appreciate the phone call, and an interesting call, too.
Of course. I love that kind of call, where somebody's, learning good stuff.
Yeah. Emma, I'm sorry, you wanted to squeeze something in here?
I wouldn't mind.
Well, okay, yeah.
Another opportunity to teach some good stuff.
Okay.
I mentioned that I was at the Expo, Landscape Ontario Expo event this past week. I ran into, of course, a million people that I knew, or many. One of them I ran into, one of the people, was Larry Shirk. You may remember Larry's name. He's a longtime Toronto resident, worked for Sheridan Nurseries forever and ever and ever, retired a number of years ago, but continues to be a hobby gardener in the East York area. I think he's in the East York area. Well, I know he spoke at the Riverdale. I think he's in the Riverdale area. Bottom line is Larry commented to me that he wants to remind everyone how to properly wrap your evergreens, if indeed you need to wrap your evergreens prior to this winter.
Not too tightly, I'll bet.
Exactly. Do not wrap the burlap tightly around your plants like a bandage. Even though you do see this done along the highways, we never do that in our home gardens. That's the easiest way to kill a plant, is to wrap it all up real tight like a little mummy, the poor
Because
things.
The cold gets in there and it doesn't, you know, thaw during the day, and it just freezes the plant.
Aren't you good?
I remember this.
You were listening.
I've been studying, and I've been listening.
You've been listening. Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. You don't, because our temperatures fluctuate through the day and the night, and between December and February, it's dramatic. We have to allow that air to circulate.
Or, of course, there's the option of putting the four posts in the ground around the tree and wrapping that with burlap, which, you see?
Aren't you smooth? Very good.
You will not believe how proud I am of myself right now.
Stakes with burlap, absolutely, and then keep the top open, right? Now you've made this little kind of a hotel, four-sided structure with no roof on it. So allow the leaves and the snow and everything to drop in on top of your evergreens. Not a problem.
Excellent, excellent.
And why would we do that to our evergreens? Why would we ever wrap them
wind,
anyway?
Well, wind damage, you don't want the wind getting in there, and it just protects the plant.
Yeah, though plants that we plant should be hardy enough to withstand our regular wind. It's sometimes that we plant plants that are borderline hardy or newly planted. Mm-hmm. It's a way to give that extra protection for the first year. But the one of the biggest situations where we need to do that wrap is if the prevailing west wind is blowing salt from the road.
Right, that's
when you definitely want to make sure you're protecting your evergreens, because they will very much show salt damage. And a proper wrapping, as Frank explained, is the way to protect.
Very good.
Nicely done.
Well, thank you.
My frick to my frack.
I'm not sure what that meant, but Sharon is on the line with us from Toronto, and we'll get to that call right now. Hi, Sharon. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Charlie,
I
have been quite successful in the past. The last time I did this 15 years ago was to start a lemon tree from lemon pits.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it.
What? They won't?
I've bought different types of small lemons. No. I did go to a nursery recently, and the fella just quickly said, oh, it's the type of lemons that we're now getting in the way they're growing them for transportation.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. It could be... So, okay, think about it. Your lemon has the seeds inside. And tomatoes are another good example of this. There's lots of liquid. There's the seeds right in touch with all that liquid. And yet those seeds don't germinate inside the fruit. So why is that? Well, the plant naturally has some enzymes and things that it coats the seed in to not allow the seed to grow inside the fruit. Because otherwise, you know, that would be really weird. You'd have tomato plants jumping out of the tomato fruit and lemon trees jumping out of a lemon. So that's one reason why you may have trouble with the germination. Make sure you really, really clean the seeds. Now, I don't mean like scrub them with a scrubbing brush.
But really with cool water, really, I massage them in my fingertips.
Yep.
And this is frustrating. Yeah, we used to do it in school, and my last tree I have in my home now was 15 years old, getting much older, so I thought I'd try again.
So you've been scrubbing the seeds, then you've been putting them into something simple like moist paper towels, or what have you been doing?
Yeah, like a shallow lid, lid from a jar, a wee bit of water in it. And I'm going from when I did it.
Yeah, and you've had no cracking of the seed coat, no germination, just the whole thing rots eventually, or what happens?
Yeah, it's rotting. And, you know, I'm looking at my little lid of water, And just about every day or every other day, I'll gently change that water.
Yep, good idea. Okay, tell you what, I don't have the, this is one of those things I'll have to do some homework just to see if there's any extra thing you could do. Mm-hmm. There are some techniques to help seeds germinate, particularly ones with really hard seed coats, like a lemon seed.
Yeah.
One is scratching the seed coat with a knife. And that might be, it's called scarification. It's like scarring the seed coat. And that sometimes helps water or liquid to be absorbed into the seed.
I know what you mean, yeah.
So that might be something you might want to try in the meantime.
Yep.
I will look it up and report next week because I have some great books on how to grow any seed.
Use a lemon, what were they called?
Grater thing?
Yeah, zester.
Zester.
That's a little rough, isn't it?
No, you will actually do, I'd almost be inclined more to use like almost a razor blade and just put a couple slits, small slits in the seed.
I will try.
But the other thing is that, like you mentioned, a garden center, somebody said, oh, it's the lemons we're importing. They don't grow from seed. Keep in mind, like garlic is a good example, right? All the garlic that we buy, the fresh garlic, is from China, of all places. It's grown in China and sent overseas to us.
Mm-hmm.
It would grow in that long process of transportation and sitting on the shelf, but it is irradiated to keep it from growing.
Oh, yeah.
And it could be that that's something that they're doing with some of the lemons and some of the tropical fruits as well. There's a certain amount of irradiation to keep people like you from growing lemon trees, and that way you have to keep buying their lemons.
Well, because a lot of my lemons have been coming from Florida, then I was able to, and I liked the taste of the fruit better, lemons from Argentina. They are tasty.
Yeah, okay.
They're thinner skin.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me see if I can come up with some techniques that you might not have thought of, but I'll report on that next week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thanks, Sharon, for the call. Care. Charlie Dobbin's Garden Show on the air here at AM 740 as we say good morning to Emma. Hi, Emma. How are you doing?
Morning.
Morning.
I have two hydrangea that have never bloomed. I would like to transplant them. Is this a good time or is spring better?
Either would work. How long have you had those hydrangeas?
About 5 years.
About 5 years.
They're not too big, like, because they come back very slowly.
And they're the kind, they're supposed to have like round flowers on them when they grow, when they do flower?
I think they're endless summer, but for some reason they haven't bloomed on me.
Well, no, they're endless summer, that's good because they are worth keeping and not eliminating. Prior to the invention and introduction of the endless summer hydrangea, we did have some hydrangeas that really didn't flower.
Mm-hmm.
But endless summer should flower for you. The trick is make sure they're in a good quality soil, a soil that has a fair amount of organic material in it.
It does, and I add pine needles. I have to come in the country, so we got lots of pines.
Okay. They do like a slightly acidic soil, so that's fine. The other thing is they need a half-day sun, morning preferable to late afternoon.
They do get that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they have a certain amount of... And all I do is I cut them down in the spring after I see what's alive.
Mm-hmm, right, yeah, I've been doing that.
And... you've had sort of no success in the last 5 years at all, or did you have
you
a
know what,
year?
I think they did bloom the first year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know mine did not bloom last year at all, but then this past year bloomed like crazy. So it's sort of one of those things that they do, I think, tend to be a little sporadic. Also, I think they do need to be happy in their location. So
Now, it is a little bit dry because they are close to... like a row of pine and spruce
trees. Yeah, so...
Running of their roots.
Maybe...
So they do have to water them quite a bit.
Right, so I'd get them a little further away from those trees
and
incorporate some manure.
So I can transplant them now?
You could, yes, now or in the spring, whichever works for you.
Okay. All right.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Emma, have a great weekend, and thank you for listening to The Garden Show. Hey, it's Phyllis from Alliston on the line. Hydrangea, I think the subject matter here.
Another hydrangea question.
Yes, hello, Phyllis.
Yes, hi, good morning.
Morning.
What a coincidence that she happened to call when I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah, is that right?
Having the same problem.
Same hydrangea?
But good morning, Frank, and good morning, Charlie.
Morning, Phyllis.
Anyways, it's quite a big hydrangea, but this year it didn't bloom.
Hmm.
I don't know why.
How long has yours been in the ground?
Okay, it's been about... Oh, I'd say 4 years.
4 years. And do you think it's an endless summer hydrangea, or do you know?
I don't know the name of it.
When you bought it, is it supposed to have round flowers or conical flowers?
So big, quite big blooms it had when I first planted it.
Wait, was it pink?
Yes.
Okay, so that would, if it is only, you know, 4 or so years old, it's probably the same endless summer. What's special about that hydrangea is that it's supposed to bloom on the new wood or the growth that comes during the growing season, but also it's supposed to bloom on growth from the year before.
Okay.
But it does seem to do best, it, certainly in my experience, in quite a good organic soil. None of this sandy soil or pure clay soil. It needs a soil with lots of, you know, whether it's manure or compost, lots and lots of rich organic material. That way it holds the moisture better and seems to be in a better position to actually produce all those blooms and hold them up. In a thin soil, you'll find the plant just kind of looks sad and hangs, the leaves kind of hang on the plant.
It's so bushy and big, but no flowers this year.
No flowers.
And last year, I believe there was a few.
Okay.
But in the year before that, it was, you know, a few of them. I don't know, is it in the spot maybe that I've got it?
Well,
it's on the north side of the house.
No, that should be fine because it probably gets a couple hours of sun even on the north side, which is fine.
For sure.
How big is the plant when you say it's so big?
Well, it's like, I can't imagine what size it would be.
Like 3 feet across kind of thing?
Excuse me?
Is it like 3 feet wide and tall?
Yes. It's about 3 feet wide around, okay. But it didn't bloom this year. And I thought, oh my goodness, what the heck? What did I do? But
did you prune it at all this past spring?
Yes.
Yeah, you did.
I did. I believe I did it last year.
Okay.
I didn't do it this year.
Well, see, what I do in the spring is I see all those stems are sticking up in the spring because the leaves have all fallen off last fall. And then what happens is that little green buds form along the stems, but typically the stems are not alive right to the top. They're only alive at my house. Usually the bottom sort of 4 inches or 5 inches of any stem is alive. The top, you know, foot or 2 feet might be completely dead. And so in the spring, once the green starts to come out, the buds start to fatten up and swell, it's pretty obvious where the plant is alive and where it's dead. And
okay.
I take all the dead off in the spring.
So should I cut this down now?
Nope. I would leave it till
just
the spring
leave it until
and
next year.
Remove all the dead at that time.
Okay.
But if the plant is an old hydrangea, older than 5 years ago, meaning it's not an endless summer, then it may be a plant that will not give you a lot of flowers ever because it only blooms on old wood. And all that trimming we have to do every spring is the old wood. And we end up with a lot of leaves. So give it another year. Do trim off all the dead in the spring. Give it another year. Do not fertilize with any, you know, sort of big amount of fertilizer. You can do one fertilizing in the spring only and leave it alone for the summer and see how it goes. See if you get
with
some
what,
flowers.
Manure?
If you're going to do a top dressing with manure, you could do that in the spring. Absolutely, yes. And then you would not need to fertilize anymore at all for the rest of the summer.
Okay.
And see how it goes. Give us a call if you don't get flowers again.
Sounds good.
Thanks,
all right, Phyllis.
Have a great day.
Thank you. 941 here at AM 740. Frank Proctor, along with Charlie Dobbin, who is the master gardener, answering your questions. And by the way, we have a phone line open or two here, so I'll repeat the numbers. 416-360-0740 for those in the Toronto area. And then anywhere else in the province, toll-free 1-866-740-4740.
Something we forgot, not we, I'll take responsibility, I forgot to mention when I was talking about Sierra Sil earlier, 20 minutes or so ago, mentioning that Sierra Sil is a mineral nutrient that you and I both take, keeps us limber and pain-free, and we find it very effective. It's great for those sort of aging joints. It is not only available over the web or via your phone, but it is available in good quality health food stores. So in Toronto, on the Danforth, the Big Carrot has Sierra Sil. Up in Thornhill, Ambrosia carries Sierra Sil. Nature's Emporium in Newmarket, Nature's Source in Mississauga, Whole Foods, and the Peanut Mill in St. Catharines all carry Sierra Sil.
There you go, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Friends say she's down to earth, and that's usually where you'll find her. Welcome back to the AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
And the sous chef of the garden, Frank Proctor. Delighted you could share part of the day with us. Jackie from Schaumburg on the line. Good morning, Jackie.
Yes, I'm here.
Good morning.
Okay.
Good morning. I have a question about a butterfly bush. Mm-hmm. I bought it this spring, and I'm not sure what I should do with it for the winter.
Did it attract lots of butterflies this past month or so?
Yes, and hummingbirds, too.
Excellent. What a great bush. So what you do is leave it alone. Don't touch it.
Oh.
Excuse me. In the spring, similar to what we were talking about with the hydrangea, what you'll do is you'll wait. And in the spring, eventually, it's going to take a little while. The ground's going to have to thaw. Things are going to start to warm up. Birds are going to be singing, you know, water is going to be moving. And when you look at your butterfly bush, you will see some green growth on it. It might only be at the bottom, or it might be sort of halfway up the bush.
Okay.
But you will trim at that point to the green.
Okay.
In many winters at my house, I end up taking my butterfly bush almost right down to the ground because it's only alive right at the very bottom.
Okay. So
on a mild winter, though, sometimes it's a foot tall that's alive, and then, you know, the 4 feet above that is all dead. But you will trim, and you'll wait until you can see green growth before you do it.
All right. Now, the dead blooms that are on it now, should I clip them off?
Only if they're bothering you. They're unsightly. They're in the way. Sometimes butterfly bushes get so big that they start, you know, flinging themselves around in the wind that they could actually damage right to the base, and you don't want that.
Well, that's what I was kind of wondering because it grew much taller and bushier than I was expecting it to for the first year. Mm-hmm. And where it is, it's not that far from the house, but we do get a fair amount of snow up here sometimes.
Which is good.
Which is good. And would it hurt to put some chewed up leaves around the base of it?
Not at all.
Okay.
The chewed up leaf idea acts like a mulch in case we don't get snow, acts like an insulating blanket. But wait to do any mulching on any of your tender plants, because butterfly bush is a zone 5 plant. So you are in zone 5 where you live in Woodbridge. So in Schaumburg. So the idea is to recognize it is borderline tender. Nice idea to give it a little extra protection, but wait until it's colder outside. Wait until it's gotten, the ground is colder, because if you mulch too early, you actually trap heat, which you don't want to do. You want everything to get cold and then trap and stop the plants at that point.
Okay, great.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Jackie.
Bye-bye.
Nice to hear from the folks in the Schaumburg area.
And what a great plant, too, butterfly
bush.
Well,
attracting hummingbirds,
too. I know. It must be like a bright pinky purple one that she's got for the hummingbirds to come.
Sounds absolutely gorgeous.
It is. It's a great plant. Butterflies, it's on the network, right? Once you've got a butterfly bush, they come in droves.
Wow.
They're a great plant for attracting butterflies.
All righty. I'm going to try that in the balcony.
You should.
Rochelle in Toronto, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, thank you. I've called you before about my dianthus because you told me how to winter it over with lots of snow, and we were lucky we had a lot.
Yeah.
And you said, and your voice is ringing in my ears now, give it a little haircut. And I didn't. And it bloomed just so profusely all summer, and then a couple of months ago, suddenly it stopped, and it looked like it was poking seed heads up.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So I cut those back as best as I could without getting too much of the green. And it's not blooming at all. Each plant has maybe one bloom on it. And I'm wondering if I have let it go to seed and if it's finished its life expectancy.
No, because remember, dianthus is an early blooming plant. So it will typically only bloom in the spring or early summer. Oh. So what you saw makes total sense, that you saw it blooming, then you saw the little spindly seed heads, which you trimmed off, which is perfect, and then it's a little mound of foliage for the rest of the season. And then many of the dianthus are actually evergreen or semi-evergreen, so it just sits like that little gray, pincushiony sort of looking plant all winter, and then come spring, it pops out with a bunch of flowers again.
Okay, so I did put some chicken fertilizer around my garden this past week because of the rain. That's 442.
Okay.
Our numbers.
Yep. And this was well composted. So this was bagged chicken manure.
It's commercially sold.
Right. That's fine. That's perfect.
Okay.
Let everything sit there for the winter, and you will be amazed at how much bigger and lusher everything will be next spring.
Oh, they're so wonderful. Yeah. What a wonderful plant.
Good. Oh, good for you. I'm glad that you've gotten on top of the getting some manure down, because certainly in the Toronto area, and for any of us with older gardens, the soil does get tired. And amending that soil with good quality organic material, whether it's chicken poop or cattle poop or, you know what I'm saying, you know, any of those good poops, compost, all of that is great. Peat moss, these are all leaves, chopped up leaves. All of this is good material to rejuvenate the soil.
I got to tell you, Rochelle, it's such a treat to go over to Charlie's and watch her. She's a chicken wrangler, and she brings a whole bunch of chickens in and have them poop all over the plants. It's marvelous to see.
Really?
He's joking.
I'm kidding. I'm
no,
kidding.
Because you would never want fresh chicken poop. It's got to be well aged.
Just the thought in mind was too much for me to resist. 9:52, we got to move along here because
thank you, Rochelle.
Audrey's waiting on the line, and just a little bit longer, Audrey, to hang on that line from Guelph, but we'll be back after these words.
You supply the what and where, and she'll come through with the how. You're listening to the AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
And the sous chef, Frank Proctor, along saying hi and good morning, and welcome to Audrey from Guelph. Hi, Audrey.
Good morning.
Charlie and Frank.
Hi.
Question. Fall fertilizer, is it too late to apply fall fertilizer? And if I do that at the moment, should I also integrate some seed into it?
Okay, so you're talking about the lawn, obviously.
Yes, please.
It is not too late to apply fall fertilizer, so go ahead and do that. The seed you could integrate, but it's unlikely to come up this fall. If you're gardening on a level playing field, a level lawn, then the seed will sit and wait until the conditions are optimal before it will germinate. So you're likely to see the seed come up next spring if it doesn't wash away or get eaten by the birds or whatever, and it stays there, it will come up next fall, next spring. But I don't think we have enough weeks of warmth for the seed to come up now.
Okay, thank you very much.
There you go. You're very welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Succinct little call there.
There you go.
That allows us to...
I should be that quick all the time,
yes,
right?
You should. Oh, Guinevere on the line from Brampton. Good morning, Guinevere. I love that name.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
Hi.
Morning.
I wanted to ask a question about my Christmas cactus. How can I get it to bloom? It used to bloom, but it hasn't bloomed for a year.
Have you got it on a nice sunny windowsill?
Yes.
Okay, and is the window face south or west?
South, I think.
Okay, and have you got the curtains open on that window?
No.
Okay. Is there shears or what's on the window?
Shears.
Shears. Okay, so can you put the plant onto the ledge behind the shears so that it's in the light more than it currently is?
Right.
Because the plant needs lots and lots of light. It loves the cool temperature coming off of the cool window.
Yeah.
So if you do if you have a deep enough window ledge and the shears sit forward, it'd be great if you could tuck the plant up to that pane of glass and get it right into the light and only water when the soil is bone dry. Let the soil become like the Sahara Desert before you do any watering. You will find that it will bloom.
Okay, now my house doesn't have windowsills.
Oh, that's a problem.
That's bad, isn't it?
Yeah. Is there a window somewhere where you don't have curtains closed? Like, is there a bedroom or a bathroom? Or...
No, there isn't, no. I'll pull the curtain open.
Okay. Do that. Leave the curtain open during the day. You can close it at night, of course.
Right.
But just make sure that the plant is getting lots of light and make sure it's in a cool spot.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, I find, you know what? My bedroom faces south and we leave our bedroom window open at night. And my Christmas cactus love all that cold air blowing in on them at night. And of course, they get the hot sun all day. And then they get the cool night temperatures blowing around them and they bloom like crazy. Of course, I don't water very often.
No, and don't water it.
No. Okay. Exactly. Okay.
Nice. Thank you very much, Charlie and Frank. Is it Frank?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
I love your program.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Guinevere. I feel like singing something from...
Camelot.
Camelot, yes, I do.
Thanks, Guinevere.
Good luck with that plant, too. We don't have time for another call, but I want to just refer to something that Charlie and I were discussing while off-air, and we were hearing messages from our sponsors about the chicken. I was kidding about the leading the chickens into the garden.
Yeah, being a wrangler.
Yeah, but... Surprisingly enough, I said to Charlie, can you have chickens like in the city? And the answer, Charlie?
Yes, of course. Yeah, you can. I mean, every community or municipality has its own bylaws. But I was saying to Frank, growing your own chickens is part of that. Growing your own, eat local. There's quite a movement of, people doing that, taking the responsibility for a couple of chickens, 2-3 chickens right in the backyard, using those chickens to eat bugs, right?
Yeah.
And eat weed seeds and provide eggs and provide that good compostable manure.
Now, isn't that a son of a gun? I never thought that I didn't think that was legal, but
it
as
is
you
legal,
say,
but it is.
You got to check
like
your bylaws.
Any form of farming, it's a 24/7, 365 day a year job, right? You don't go take off for the winter and leave your chickens, right? You know, it's one of those.
that wouldn't be nice.
No, it wouldn't. So that's what I'm saying. And certainly, friends of mine who are out in the rurals, it's so cool, the idea of having chickens, but then there's the foxes, right? The fox gets into the chicken coop and you say bye-bye to all your chickens. So it's quite a lot of responsibility.
So would you have a rooster there too? Or
No, you do not need a rooster and you don't want a rooster.
No, I guess not.
Because what are you going to do with a rooster? You know?
Well, I know what the rooster's going to do, but that's his problem.
That's his problem. No, you don't want a rooster. And the other thing is, what do you do with the chickens after they get really old and aren't laying so much?
Sounds like Christmas dinner coming up.
That's right. That's the old, and not everybody's quite ready for that. So make sure you've got a plan. You know, chickens make a great pet, but, you know, have a plan how far
I'm afraid
goes.
Of the damn things.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't. Oh, yeah.
Afraid of chickens?
Well, they look mean. They look mean. They look like they're going to try and poke your eye out.
But they're so little. And some of them are really pretty.
Yeah, but I think they could fly if they wanted to, you know. Hey, you know, we got to get out of here.
We do.
The boys are due to come on here.
They're revving
Dave's
the engines.
Corner Garage. I'm getting the word from Ellen Gelman. Get out. Okay.
Thanks,
all right. We're on our way.
Frank, for all your great, great sous chef ability. Thanks, Andre. Good to see you. Thanks for all our great callers, and I'll see you next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.